What's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. You can call me 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm so humbled and very thrilled to have my next guest joining us, one of the most prolific and profound columnists that has written in the Midwest, and I think especially for the Journal Sentinel, a man whose writing I enjoy to read so much because I think it's so important to have the personal perspective that he brings to the table about growing up in Milwaukee and what's great and what's also complicated and needs work in Milwaukee to be joining us. Mr. James Causey, first of all, congratulations on your Gridiron Award for Best Column.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
So excited to have you here. It's been a big year for you.
It's been a really good year. My writing has really tried to take it up a notch, and really what I want to do is really give people a slice of life of what I see on a daily basis. Yeah. And I think a lot of people miss that. So this has been a really good year for me so far.
And so important to have your voice to share with not just Milwaukee, but the state. It is basically the paper of record, if I may. Gridiron Award this year for Best Column. You've been acknowledged by the National Association of Black Journalists this year. Marquette Alumni Awards out of the Communications College also acknowledging your work. You've won many awards in the past. You've been a fellow at USC, a fellow at Harvard. You mentor up-and-coming journalists. What haven't you done, sir?
I haven't won a Pulitzer.
You're going to work on that, though, right? We're going to make that happen. That's next. That's the only thing left to do, right? You grew up in Milwaukee. You went to Jackie Robin Middle School. And one of the things that I loved, because I've always kind of been a news junkie myself, one of your columns, you mentioned that you got into the news because of the news quiz.
Yes.
I was like, oh, James, I did those too. When I was in grade school, our teachers used to do them on Friday. It was like this fun thing that we would do. And I used to scour the newspapers so that I could win the news quiz.
Hold on. Young person here. What is a news quiz? We did not have these. I'm so sorry.
See, we have to bring the news quiz
back
because,
clearly.
Because what it was is it was a game. Think about something like Trivia Pursuit or something like that.
Like Jeopardy kind of.
Or Jeopardy, yeah. It would have different categories, sports news, local news, state news. And you would get questions like easy. It starts from easy questions and go to harder questions. You get more points based on how you answer the question. So at Jackie Robinson, we would split up into two teams. And my parents subscribed to the newspaper, which I loved. And that was my first love for reading all the time. And I would like be the first person picked. And so
yes, getting picked first for the news quiz teams. We did it in teams too.
Yeah, it was probably the best time of my life. I really enjoyed that. We need to bring that back, actually. I need to talk to my paper about bringing that back.
Well, and like MPS, it was you were getting rewarded for engaging. That was the and you would get reward, and it was the major news stories. It wasn't totally obtuse. It wasn't, let me try to get you on a question. It was, if you religiously read the newspaper, you would know the answers to these questions.
Right.
And we see versions of them now. I still do like the New York Times news quiz, and WAPO has a version of that too. So I still do them. But there was something special about doing it in those tender middle school years.
Oh, yeah.
And on a team.
It was wonderful. And really got young people engaged in the news. And I think we sort of fell off of doing that, and we need to get back to doing those kind of things.
Yeah, it was, for me, I think it's kind of where I got the bug for current events and just politics.
Yes.
You started to see patterns, right? Because you were consuming a lot of it, and it made what seemed to be sort of adult business, if you will, accessible and that I had an access point and that I could understand what was going on. It really helped me feel engaged in the world.
Yes, yes. Like I said, we have to bring something like that back because, you know, if you could get young people at an early age into reading news, I think you could hold them for a longer period of time.
Well, yeah, and not news just from TikTok, right? And that's okay. I'm not slamming TikTok. I think that's fine.
But we have to be, realist, and that's how a lot of people get their, young people get their news today. So
It
can't be the only, correct.
James, I didn't plan to do this, but how about this? How about me and you try to figure out a way to give them the news quiz? Me and you, we'll come up with a quiz. We can figure out how to do this.
We can.
I would like... Because I still know a couple of 2-3 people back at Milwaukee County and at the city and MPS. I bet we can get them to do this.
I think our politicians would actually like that.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think it helps everybody. If you're helping to raise young people engaged and knowledgeable and feeling like they've got a place at the table.
Well, think about it. It's part of civil engagement, too.
Yeah.
If you're more in tune with what's going on in your neighborhood and in your community and state, then if you can... answer those questions, it just makes you a better citizen, I think.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There was one piece that you wrote early this year that I thought was just absolutely watershed and seminal. It came on the heels of a young reporter, I believe for WTMJ, Taylor Lumpkin, had been at Country Thunder the previous summer and had some racial slurs repeatedly, not just once, hurled at her, like in person, face to face. And you wrote a piece that came out on January 30th of this year. And it said, "I'm worn from years of racial slurs, but I'll no longer be silent about bigotry." And what you described therein, again, as with all of your writing, very personal. And I thank you for that. It really helping to understand what your lived experience is and having respect for that because it's so human and so vulnerable, I think helps people get a toehold, a foothold to understand better.
Yeah. So the piece actually came out in December.
It did.
I think it was the January.
And updated.
Yeah, it was updated. I think what we did, we made it free for everyone so they could see it. But what I wanted to do is just really talk about how difficult the job is for someone like me to do on a daily basis, because it's not easy. I'm trying to be a focal point for people to, let me rephrase that. What I try to do is just really give people a slice of life of what I see on a daily basis. And some people just don't want to hear the truth.
Yeah.
And I think some people, and even to this day, even after the article ran, some people still feel that they have the right to say whatever they wanted to me. You know, call me out my name, call me the N-word. Actually, I've been called an N-word more based on the stories I've written than, you know, living, just going through my daily life. And there should be consequences to calling me out and saying certain things. Don't get me wrong. I believe everybody has a right to their own opinion. But when you take shots at me, when you start sending letters to my home.
That was shocking to me.
Yeah. When you start thinking that you could just get away with calling me all out my name and making threats to me, then that's a whole nother story. And, you know, to be honest with you, I didn't really want this to be all about me. What I wanted to be about is what a lot of journalists of color have experienced, but they keep silent about it. And I'm glad that Taylor Lumpkin came out and said what she said, but she actually left the industry.
She did, completely up and left.
And we already have a problem with keeping people of color in news.
Yes.
And if we don't protect them, then more people will leave. What I do like and respect by this new generation of young journalists is that they're not going to remain
not
silent.
Not having it, yes.
No, they will take to their social media pages. They will call people out. And I learned the old school way. I learned under Eugene Cain and Greg Stanford, a longtime columnist at
Grew
the paper.
Up reading them, yep.
And they just, you know, they kept to themselves and they just kept trying to crank it out. But it takes its toll when you don't have anybody to turn to say, hey, man, I'm going through this and I want you to understand it. And honestly, I didn't really expect some of my editors to understand. Because how do you tell them, hey, I'm constantly being called the N-word all the time and people are sending letters to my home and things like that. How do you explain that? So I just pretty much kept it to myself.
And I think what I admired so much about it was that you said that very plainly, that it's trauma, right? That is everyday trauma, that you bore that in silence, and that part of fixing this is that we have to support journalists of color, and we have to make it okay and invite people to share that. I often say a burden shared can be a burden borne.
Right.
But we have to make sure that people feel empowered to speak when these things are happening. And I admire that you called out the, you didn't even say pressure, but that it didn't seem acceptable or open to talk about it. And talking about it is really the first thing.
And race relations are a very difficult thing to actually talk about in the first place. And I've tried to take the high road. I remember one example that I gave in my story is that a young man, he contacted me saying, you know, why do black people do this and X, Y, and Z? So I said, well, let's meet and let's have a conversation. I didn't want to go back and forth over email with him. And I said, I agree to pay. Let's just have lunch and just talk.
Yep.
And the day before, I sent him an email, say, are we still on to have lunch, my treat? And he told me, no, James, you'll probably leave me stuck with the bill and sneak out the back or something to that effect. But those kind of things, some people really don't want to have real conversation, even when you give them an opportunity to do so.
And that's, to me, that there are moments of what I call that sort of heartbreak where you're extending yourself and it is hard to remain open and to have that kind of conversation, and then to have people basically double down on what is hate speech, right? And you mentioned Mr. Eugene Cain, as well as Greg Stanford, grew up reading them, really appreciated that. And I've seen, you know, Michael Harriet with A Root also took this on in sort of a modern frame, if you will, which it was always interesting to me to see some of your commentary and Mr. Harriet taking up some of the hate mail that he would get in a really direct way and breaking it down, that we can have these kinds of different tones, different types, different manners of dialogue, and to embrace that and to try to promote and elevate those difficult discussions. We're going to continue this discussion with Mr. James Causey of Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, award-winning columnist. So excited to have him. Don't go anywhere, anybody. We'll be back after just a brief message. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm joined this hour by columnist for the Journal Sentinel, award-winning newsman and reflector of his experience, and I believe in a way trying to share a little bit of a slice of life of what Milwaukee is so that we can all understand and dialogue even on the tough stuff. James Causey, again, thank you so much for being here. We were talking about one of the more lengthy columns that you've written that came in sort of some of the fallout from a young female television reporter by the name of Taylor Lumpkin, who went to Country Thunder to report and had some terrible things said to her. And she tweeted about it, and it sparked this massive conversation. And you took your medium in hand and shared some of your experiences over your 30-year career, including a wall of hate that you had for a while. And what I found fascinating, and if you haven't read Mr. Causey's piece, it's called I'm Worn from Years of Racial Slurs. I'll No Longer Be Silent About Bigotry. It's an opinion piece, came out first November 29th. I got the date right now, 2023. You can find it. It is free on the Journal Sentinel's website. That's JS Online. Your wall of hate, it wasn't just every bit of racially based hate mail you got. It had to be a typewritten or handwritten letter.
Right.
They had to use the N-word at least twice and then another racial slur. In other words, it would have been you would have needed walls. You had to meet the qualifications.
And exactly.
You put them up, and you referenced one of the sayings by Malcolm X that I thought was really powerful. Here is the quote. I have no mercy or compassion in me for a society that will crush people and then penalize them for not being able to stand up under the weight. And the weight here is cumulative. Mm-hmm. Is it not?
It is. I talked about being worn because imagine this. It's like you could have a brand new house, but over the years from hail and rain and sleet, if you go and look at your home after like 20 or 30 years and you look at it and you're like, I think I need to freshen the paint a little bit because over time it gets worn. That's how I felt I was getting worn by the years of racism that I endured. And I didn't want to be silent. And this was a perfect opportunity for me to have this conversation. But I also want to give credit to my editor, to Greg Borowski, who wrote a companion piece to this, who said that, you know, we need to do something about this.
Yes.
And one of the first things that we did as a news organization was shut down comments because comments were, you know, in its easiest form, it was meant for people to have great dialogue, but it never really amounted to that. It just really turned down to one side against another side, name calling and all this other kind of stuff. So it didn't really accomplish what it was intended to. So we shut down comments and we decided to say, hey, what else is going on? And we realized that some of our female reporters were being sexually, had to endure harassment. And so we had to take a look at that. And so we're doing a number of things right now, and the industry is doing a number of things right now based on this piece to make sure that reporters are safe. And I'm not saying reporters are the toughest people out there. A lot of people may think we're soft, but we're very tough. We deal with a lot of stressors. But we also need to be protected so we could continue to give the news that as we see it. And we can't do that if we're under a constant strain of racism and sexism.
I'm joined this hour by columnist for the Journal Sentinel, James E. Causey. Thanks again for being here. I think being able to, again, give some voice to this, talk about this, I certainly never want to ever center myself when the conversation is about race. I'm a white lady and I walk around with that privilege every day. But there's certainly, as you noted, James, were some echoes of things when I have experienced harassing behavior that I don't know if shame's the right word, but I didn't quite know how to process it. Mm-hmm. Should I tell someone? Wait a minute, should I not? What I do, that kind of thing. Over the course of your career, have you been able to find confidence in understanding and really internalizing that you are not responsible for this ridiculous reaction, that you should be able to talk and write and say and do
I'm not responsible for anyone's racism or how they behave, and no one should be responsible for any kind of negative behavior that's injected on them.
What I'm saying is
even the sexism that you endured should not be tolerated.
Yes.
And why do we think that, it brings up this interesting point. Why do we always feel like we're at fault in some way, shape, or form when somebody is doing something negative towards us? But that gets to the point of how things could get shaped. Yeah. So we have to change that conversation, and we have to start injecting ourselves and saying this will no longer be tolerated, because if we allow it to continue to fester, people get emboldened to even do more and more.
Well, and I feel like that's the moment that we're in, right? Yeah. My parents expressed, and some of my friends expressed, some concern when I told them I was going to start to do this as sort of my full-time job. Mm-hmm. Are you sure you want to do that? I have gotten hate mail and threats in my prior job capacity. Mm-hmm. We get offensive messages while we're live on air. My producers had to screen offensive callers. And I always want to support the producers and people that work in this medium by saying, somebody starts saying that stuff to you on the phone, hang it up or record it. And then we will make fun of that person.
So this is where I come from. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
However, there's consequences for the things that you say. So people, you have freedom of speech to say whatever you want.
Yep.
But expect consequences.
Yeah. The accountability there, like, put your name on it.
Yeah.
I'll say your you want to send me thus and such.
Right.
Give me your name, full name, and I will talk about it.
Exactly.
Not afraid to engage with your nonsense, but don't do that anonymously. That is cowardly.
I could give you a very quick example. Even yesterday, I received an email from someone who started out the email with you N-word, blah, 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 based on a LeBron James column that I did there where I say LeBron James surpassed Michael Jordan. And he went berserk.
I agree, by the way.
And he had his signature on his email from a construction company out of New York City. So my response to him, past me would have just ignored it. This new me said, do you think your human resources department would approve
like to
on
know
this?
About this?
Maybe I should send this to him. He apologized like you would not believe, started talking about all the problems he had at home with his wife and his daughter and all this kind of stuff. But that doesn't give you the right to call me out my name. You don't know me, sir.
Don't give me the excuses. Don't tell me about all your problems. Don't make your problems my problems.
Right.
Don't project your nastiness.
Right.
Congratulations. Hoorah. Yes, more of that. People need to be accountable for the words that come out their mouth and that they write to people. It is obnoxious. I don't know if this guy's picture we got was friendly or not that we just got on the text line, Anya, but I just got a picture. Is it a friendly?
That's for a different show. Don't worry about that.
Okay. Thank
you. You know, one thing I will say this too, it gets back to our leadership in our country.
Yes.
If our leadership allows this, then it will continue.
Oh, and promotes it, embraces it. We will talk more. My guest this hour, columnist extraordinaire from Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, James E. Causey. Don't go anywhere. Your farm update is next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. I'm joined this hour by columnist for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, James E. Causey. So glad to have you here talking about bringing to the fore through your column some of the more challenging questions that I think face us all, not just as a journalist or a columnist, but each and every one of us. How do we talk about racism, especially? It's gotten turned up. I mean, it is very loud and proud these days, as is sexual harassment and some misogyny and homophobia. I just feel like the volume on that stuff is louder than it's ever been in my lifetime.
Yeah, and I think during a political campaign, too, you start to see the rev up of a lot of things because people feel emboldened to talk about it at this point in time.
Yeah. It's disturbing. And I really hope, as you did by speaking about your experience as a columnist, that we continue to be able to engage and have the difficult conversations with each other and to talk about these things. To me, it's the key. If people are suffering in silence, or feel like they can't share their experiences and have those experiences respected and listened to, right? That is what will allow the isms to fester and take greater foothold. We've always had a race problem in this country. We've always had a woman problem, meaning a misogyny problem. We've always had difficulty. But certainly otherization and the fact that it's become sort of part of the platform for one of the parties is a challenging moment.
Yeah. And I mean, anybody who doesn't believe we have those problems, they're not paying attention or they don't want to hear the truth. And it's really hard to even have a conversation with someone who can't even acknowledge those basic right. things that we truly know and understand.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of the problem, I think, whether we're talking about women in media or media representations of women or people of color, is sort of the calling upon some of the stereotypes. You wrote what I thought was an incredibly important column very recently about the fact that Good Times has been rebooted. Mm-hmm. I have not seen it. I will not be watching it after
you
reading.
You don't need to see it.
No. But suffice it to say, well, first of all, let's set the table for folks that never knew Good Times, the right. OG version. Will you tell folks what Good Times is from back in the 70s?
Well, 5 decades ago, it's hard to believe it's been that long.
I know.
Ago. 5 decades ago, Good Times was a spinoff of Maude, the Maude show. And I think some people may remember Maude, but Maude had this housekeeper. And they want to spin this off a black housekeeper. And Good Times was a family consisted of a father, mother, and 3 children who lived in the Cabrini Green housing projects in Chicago. It's the first show to actually have an intact family unit of black people. They were poor. They were struggling. And although the show was not perfect, it did hit on a lot of issues that a lot of people of color were dealing with. The idea of fighting for equal pay at work, a strong father who was trying to raise his children and keep them out of gangs and keep them on a straight and narrow path. You know, why I said a show, it was created by Norman Lear.
Mm-hmm. Who, Archie Bunker fame, Maude fame.
Yeah. Yes. And the show was actually... it was a staple in my household growing up. We watched it all the time. And, you know, one of my favorite characters was Mike Evans, the younger brother of yep. JJ, who was a clown. He was an artist, but he was also a clown. But
people might know the phrase dynamite.
Dynamite.
That yeah. comes from JJ
yeah.
in Good Times.
So JJ was an artist. The sister Thelma was a high school student who was really doing well. And Michael Evans was a young junior high school student who was very politically
engaged.
And his goal one day was to become a Supreme Court justice. The father, James Evans, was the matriarch, and he really fought. He worked hard, did factory type work. And mother, Florida Evans, pretty much she worked sometimes, but she was really at home and trying to take care of the family. So that's what that was Good Time. And so they came up with this idea to do a spinoff that was an updated version, a cartoon version that it has absolutely nothing to do with the original series. You have a baby who's a drug dealer. The baby is actually an infant who sells drugs. Ironically, they still live in the same housing project unit as their original Good Times. That's probably yep. the only thing that is a likeness to the original, but you have roaches it's a roach infested apartment. It's all these negative stereotypes towards black, and nothing about it is funny. You know, don't get me wrong, black, you know, as an African-American, I love to see funny things, mm-hmm. but there's nothing funny about this Good Time animated series. It's all negative stereotypes. And even though some of the writers have said, you know, give it a chance. I watched 10 episodes of it, and it got worse in my opinion.
I've read some of those commentary. You referenced one of the reviewers from NPR, Variety, just shocked by it. And the team includes Seth MacFarlane from Family Guy. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's okay to tell Seth MacFarlane they don't need the criminal mastermind baby or toddler in every show. I mean, come on. Steph Curry, that was shocking to me.
Yeah, and Steph Curry probably, you know, his father was an NBA player. Steph Curry has probably never had set foot in a housing project, unit like yeah. that. But Steph Curry, it's almost like, did he actually see any of these episodes? Right. I can't believe that he put his name on anything like this. And he should actually be called out for it, because him and his wife actually do things for people, poor people in their community. And they talk about, you know, uplifting the community through education and things like that. But this show makes funny of the various people that he's supposedly trying to help.
Yeah, it's like the very opposite of what Mr. Curry and his wife try to aspire to in terms of reinvestment in their community. Wanted to bring up 2 other shows that I think, at least the one, I'm a big fan of the Upshaws, which is a Regina King production along with Wanda Sykes. I believe it's on Netflix, so it's right. not on network TV, that again shows a family unit, mom and a dad, and it takes it doesn't trade on the basis of stereotypes. What do you think about the Upshaw, some of these other programs that are out there? A lot of people are big fans of the Boondocks. Again, the question of the representation of black families, black culture in media, and the tension that's there, right?
Well, yeah, I think it's important to have black writers and black people involved. I think the problem with Good Times is that the black writers who were involved with this show originally stepped away from the animated series. So, and when you have that's a sign right there. And also, the NAACP requested to see, a couple of the shows, and the writers of the animated series declined to show them. And that right there is a sign.
Tells you all you need to know.
Exactly. Exactly.
They knew what they made.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that a lot of money goes behind producing stuff like this, mm-hmm. but somebody's got to look at it and go, wait a minute.
It's a reason why, if you're going to do a reboot of a show, why do you want to reboot that show and reboot it in such a negative way? There's so many. I almost question why don't we have more positive shows depicting black families?
Yes.
I mean, That's a question that we need to be asking. And I really want African-Americans to boycott this show because it doesn't do anything positive for us.
You heard it here, James E. Causey, on the reboot of Good Times. I won't be watching it. Hope you don't either. We do not need to be lifting up those sorts of negative stereotypes. One of the things that I appreciate about your writing, Mr. Causey, is that you will criticize our city, that I'm a native Milwaukeean as well. You'll call out the problems as well as the accomplishments. I think that's so incredibly important. Just last week, we had such a tragedy mm-hmm. in the city. A hit and run killed a four-year-old and severely injured her mother when they were crossing the street. This was very close to home for me because when the people that were responsible were eventually apprehended, they were apprehended because they had a high-speed chase and ended up in a wreck at Cosmos Cafe on 72nd North. Yeah. That is my neighborhood where I grew up and my folks still live. I could name you all the businesses on that street. Mm-hmm. We grew up on the Milwaukee side, of course. But I want to talk a little bit about your piece. It was the first time in my recollection I've ever heard Mayor Johnson speak in that way. I was happy, not happy is the wrong word. I was encouraged to see his dismay, his anger about this situation. But I want to talk a little bit more about that with you. This is one of those topics that just, we can't seem to, it just doesn't seem to be getting any better. We're doing the traffic calming measures. Now, there's some statistics that are showing in some of the intersections that we are seeing fewer accidents, but we're investing a lot of money in the bump outs and the planters, and yet this kind of thing still happens. Thank you for calling it out. Thank you for pointing out that the mayor was, I think, appropriately enraged. I don't think I've ever heard him use a four-letter word at a press conference. Mayor Johnson is usually very composed. What should we be asking ourselves when we continue to see this happening?
I think what we should be asking ourselves is, like, why isn't anything that they're doing right now really working?
Yeah.
We are investing a lot of money into bump outs and turning streets into one-way streets and things like this in our city. You can't bump out your entire city and make it safer. I think we need a different approach that also, or an additional approach that also addresses the mental state of people who think that they could never get a license, never get insurance, get behind a wheel, drive like 60, 70, 80 miles per hour, go through red lights, make everybody around them terrified, and they feel that they own the roads. Like, what's behind that mentality? What's behind the mentality of someone? I can't tell you how many times I'm driving in the city and I smell weed coming from people's cars. You know, what's behind that mentality? Because if we can't change that mentality, it don't make a difference how many bump outs, how many street changes we make. nothing will ever change.
Do you think some of it is you describe people who don't, maybe don't think they'll ever get a license or they can't afford insurance. And so, you know, I don't want to use the bad words, but, you know, blanket and I'm just going to do what I'm going to do.
Well, that's the mentality of a lot of people right now on everything. It's a lot of people that don't care. It's like, I don't care about this. I don't care about this. I only care about myself and my own satisfaction. And that's what we need to be addressing. That's that's a public health situation that we need to be looking at. That's how we need to be analyzing the driving behaviors of some of the people who get behind the wheel. I mean, you know, because I don't know how many street designs we could come up with. That's not going to change things. Because when we were leaving the Press Club Awards last week, coming home on Friday night, we got to 35th Street a week, you know, a week before that. It was a fatal bus accident. And we stopped at a red light on 35th Street and four cars passed on the right going through a red and one car almost hit another lady making a left-hand turn on 35th Street. And I said, accident. My wife shrieked.
Yeah.
And, you know, a part of me wanted the person going through the red light to tear up his car, but then I didn't want the innocent person to be hurt. So, yeah.
It's a real, real problem. I've said, one of the values that we have in Milwaukee, that we have in southeastern Wisconsin, that we have in Wisconsin, is that we care about our communities and we care about one another. And I think we have to start reminding ourselves of that really explicitly every day. Each person individually, pick up the piece of trash, smile at somebody, extend some goodwill, reconnect with one another, stop hiding behind the screens and the steering wheels. Yikes.
Yes.
We're going to turn a page. Talk a little bit about one of your pieces that I think is a universal observation for everybody these days. My guest this hour, James E. Causey, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Don't go anywhere. Last segment of the Maggie Dawn Show. Keep on running because the winner don't quit on themselves. Welcome back, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Network. Happy Thursday, everybody. If you don't have plans yet for this evening, not to worry. Just download the Civic Media app, the Brewers' first pitch. They're hosting the St. Louis Cardinals, the other team that I hate almost as much as the Cubs in the National League Central. Maybe I think I actually hate the Cardinals more.
Is there a reason for that, Maggie?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
They call themselves, like, the ambassadors of baseball. It's just too arrogant. And they're like kryptonite for the Brewers. James, are you a Brewers fan?
I'm a big-time Brewers fan. I actually hate both teams equally.
I love that. I love that. My guest this hour, James E. Causey, columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He also hates the Cubs and the Cardinals. You can check that game out on the Civic Media Network. Go download the app. First pitch at 6:05. I hope to be reporting some good news for you tomorrow. I'll be going to the game tomorrow. Pretty excited about that. It'll be my first one of the season. I didn't get to go to any spring training games, which is unusual. Usually I try to sneak one in because I'm very lucky to have a couple, my parents have a place down there, so I can usually sneak one in. But this will be my first one. I'm excited. I will try to avoid smack talking with Cardinals fans that inevitably are numerous at the Brewers games. Like, St. Louis, that's a long drive. Just stay there. I don't need to see you in AmFam Field. Thank you so much, James, for joining me this hour. I cannot wait to have you back. So much to talk about. One of the things that I admire about your work is that, again, you're very yourself. There's confidence in your voice, sharing your perspective, your life. And then a lot of the things that you write about are just things that I end up finding my head nodding to, you know, like, yeah, that right there. And you just a little bit over a month ago put out a piece on all of the tipping prompts.
Yes.
And while we can sort of take a chuckle about, oh, you get asked for a tip now, damn near everywhere, doing everything, including at the ball field.
Right.
Buy a couple of $20 beers and then do you want a tip? You make a couple of really important points about what's actually going on here, and it's not just folks trying to get tips. You talk about tipflation and wage workers.
Yeah, so I think we've all experienced this. You go anywhere, you're going to be, they want a tip. You know, they flip around the screen. I like the little screen that they can flip around, and like you have to choose between leaving zero tip to up to 25% tip. And you like, wait for what? You know, you literally put a sandwich in a bag, or you did this. That doesn't deserve a 20% tip. But what we have here is a lot of companies are really supplementing the income of their workers by doing it this way. And I said, let's nip that in the bud. Let's raise the minimum wage, which hasn't been raised in God knows when. So, you know, this $7.25 an hour is just not cutting it. But our job as consumers is not to supplement that because these workers are not being paid what they should be paid. But I think tipping now is like, it's a part of culture. It's almost like
it is.
It's crazy.
It's so ingrained. I mean, it always has been here in the United States. And the worst thing about tipping to me is not just that we're simply not paying people a fair base wage, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous, mm-hmm. is that the very tipping arrangements in some customer service industries sets up a circumstance that makes abuse of the person that's providing the service very easy to get away with. She's not giving, and it's usually a she in these circumstances, right? She's not giving me good service. Well, that doesn't mean that you get to sexually harass your server, sir. Mm-hmm. And people understand that, especially servers in bars and restaurants, they're making not $7.25. They're barely, you know, I think it's under $3 an hour.
Which is insane.
It's totally insane. Right. I remember my first waitressing job. I worked at Heinemann's by St. Pius. Pius High School.
Oh, of course.
Boy, my manager was a beast. I was like, I'm sorry, I get $1.75 an hour? You know, and then I'd get the lovely older folks that would come in for late brunch or early lunch and leave me like 50 cents. Mm-hmm. We need to get rid of tipping. I mean, I think it's a stupid idea.
Well, what you're saying,
pay people enough.
But think about this now. You know, they invent of DoorDash and all these food delivery services, you see almost on a daily basis, people will deliver a meal and then you have to tip them before the meal actually gets there. And then they,
awkward.
You have these people complaining, hey, wait, you only gave me an $8 tip. Is there a problem? And you're like, well, what are you talking about? So it's crazy.
We flipped it all upside down. And again, tipflation, that's dipping into folks' pockets sort of on both sides of the scale. And my simple argument about this has always been very straightforward. You have to pay your people as a base wage without tips included, mm-hmm. a living wage. It is at least $15 an hour, period, full stop. If you tell me that your business cannot succeed by paying that wage, maybe that is not a viable business model.
Thank you.
I mean, duh. I'm an economist for crying out loud. That's the way that works. Labor has a cost.
No arguments here.
Hi, James, it has been so so lovely to talk with you.
Thank you.
So much fun to get to know you better. And again, I'm just an enormous fan of your work. Deeply respectful for what you do. I think you make us all better connected, better consumers of information, and a little bit better of a human being to one another. So thanks for what you do.
Thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Shall we do this again sometime?
You call and I'm here.
You got a new article, a new piece that's coming out.
Yes. So this one is going to be a different take. I'm taking a look at all the teachers who have been engaging in sexual innuendos with students. It seemed like if you think it happens on a daily basis, you're right. There was a study conducted by Fox that says every single day in the United States, there's a case of a teacher having sex with a student or inappropriate actions with a student. So that would be coming out pretty soon.
We'll have you back on after that piece comes out.
Perfect.
Awesome. My guest this hour, columnist, award winner for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, James E. Causey. I'm Maggie Dawn. You've been listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. The Devil's Advocates are up next. Remember, I will stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together. I'm all right, all this bit of love.
last tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.